Chapter 1, Hyden Wood.
They had ridden for nearly a fortnight, moving north by northwest, following the Danube into Germany. In the early morning light, the two riders passed into the wooded hills of northern Bavaria, where the only sound was the clatter of hooves on the causeway and the muted rush of the river. With the first chill of autumn, herons glided overhead, flying south to Africa, abandoning their nests of reed and thatch. By midday, Cale could feel his steed weakening under the tack as they reached the outskirts of Ratisbon. There he and Dennis dismounted, leading their horses down a sunken lane that ran into town. To their left was the grazing commons, where a monk led a calf towards the tithe barn, a peasant's offering to the mother church.
"We're still a day's ride from Arnest," Cale said, but Dennis didn't answer.
As they entered the crowded marketplace, the smell of smoke and dung lingered in the air, and blowing dust left a fine layer of silt over the town square. Craftsmen and merchants manned their stalls, haggling and trading with tenant farmers. A pair of lovers walked hand in hand, and from somewhere unseen came the jangle of a tambourine.
"Legrand should be here," Dennis said, scanning the crowd as they walked towards the church. They passed a trestle table where a cobbler sat with his wife. At the next stall, Dennis stopped to purchase cheese and bread.
"Crusaders," whispered the cobbler, nodding towards Dennis and Cale. "Mark their swords, and the bow the young one has. Now that's an expensive weapon." "They look more like bandits," the cobbler's wife said, while running her finger along the neckline of her smock. "The young one looks like a gypsy."
Cale said nothing, keeping his gaze straight ahead.
"Not bandits," replied the cobbler, shielding his eyes from the noonday sun. "The older man, I've seen him before." Dennis turned suddenly, and the cobbler blanched, yet Dennis looked past him, back to the eastern edge of town, and his gaze hardened. Cale turned, and there was Legrand, wearing a silk white shirt under a red doublet, strolling through the marketplace with a beautiful young woman.
"What's he doing?" Dennis said.
Legrand seemed to be in deep conversation with the woman, patting her arm as if to console her. She suddenly left him, her lovely face now pinched, as if she were about to cry. Legrand turned and walked towards them.
"Bonjour, Dennis and young Cale. I haven't seen you for an age," said Legrand, squeezing Cale's arm.
"How long have you been here, Legrand?" Dennis asked.
"Since yesterday." "You're late, brother."
"You seem to have found a way to occupy your time," Dennis said.
Cale was still watching Legrand's beautiful companion as she swept across the square. There was an old joke within the Malachi. The order had been celibate for 50 years, but no one had bothered to tell Legrand.
A ghost of a smile passed Legrand's lips. "This is a lovely town," he said with a wave of his hand. "It seems more like a French village than a German city."
"You're not on holiday, brother," Dennis said. "I want to get to Arnest by tomorrow."
"Then we better leave now," Legrand replied. "My horse is stabled at the rectory."
Half an hour later, as the Malachi crossed the Ratisbon Bridge, Cale looked down at the glittering Danube and recalled the terrible winter of 82, when the river froze. Wolves from the northern hinterlands, half-starved and fearless, had crossed the Danube. Ratisbon faced starvation that winter after a poor harvest. Almost all the cattle had been slaughtered and hung in the curing barns. Cale remembered riding into town with Dennis that awful winter day. A gentle snow had fallen, and the north end of town was strewn with dead wolves and spent arrows. Dead Malachi lay there as well, their blood staining the pristine snow as the trail of the dead led to the curing barns. It had come down to that man and wolf fighting over food to survive. Near the curing barns they had found Bernard of Tours, babbling and nearly frozen while holding a half-dead Legrand across his lap. Around them was a ring of slaughtered wolves. Cale now felt the warmth of the sun on his face and was glad for it, as he followed Dennis and Legrand to the north bank and into open country. Here the river's main channel turned southwest, bending back to its source within the Black Forest. It was late afternoon when they finally turned away from the Danube, following a ruined path that ran alongside a northern waterway. They set camp 5 miles downstream where the waterway forked and twin rivulets surged into the shadows of the forest.
While Dennis and Legrand unpacked the horses, Cale unslung his bow and followed the stream into the forest, his legs still wobbly from a full day's ride. He soon passed into the darkness of the wood, where shafts of sunlight slipped through the leafed canopy, casting a golden hue upon the forest floor.
Cale returned to camp an hour later with two large rabbits, which drew lavish praise from Legrand and even a murmur of gratitude from Dennis. "I found a curious thing in the forest," Cale said, reaching into his pocket. "About a mile east, there's a clearing within an oak grove, where I found this." Cale opened his hand, revealing a jeweled medallion in the shape of a five-pawed star.
"What else did you find there?" Dennis asked while Legrand examined the medallion.
"Ashes from a large bonfire," Cale replied. "It wasn't clear to me if it was a place of worship or sacrifice."
"Probably both," said Legrand as he dangled the medallion between his fingers. Dying sunlight glinted off the sparkling jewels.
"You shouldn't have disturbed the grove," Dennis said. "And you've announced our presence by taking that trinket, brother. You will return it at first light."
Cale said nothing and Legrand winked at him. "We shouldn't fear the unknown, brother Dennis," Legrand said. "I'm not afraid of any pagan that moves in this forest."
"Perhaps you should be," Dennis said, meeting Legrand's gaze. "And put away that medallion, you should know better, brother. Cale may be young, but you're not. Mark the shape of that star 2 points up instead of one. What does that tell you?"
"It's a reverse pentagram," Legrand said as he handed the medallion back to Cale. 2 points up, goat horns, the witch's Sabbath."
"I know that, brothers," said Cale as he slid the medallion back into his pocket. "I'm not a complete imbecile, I just thought you would like to see it, that's all. I'll return it now."
"I said tomorrow that soon enough," Dennis said while crouching beside a triangle of firewood. He pulled a tinderbox out of his cloak and then looked up at Cale. "Nightfall approaches, don't wander about, brother. You can gather some more wood while our dear Legrand skins these rabbits for us."
Less than an hour later, darkness descended over the woodlands, and the three men huddled close to the campfire where they enjoyed a veritable feast of rabbit, cheese, and bread. As Dennis tossed another log onto the blaze, embers sparked into the night.
"The Magi of the East believe that fire is a manifestation of the divine," Dennis said. "Indeed, it's a living thing, feed it and watch it grow." As if in answer, the blaze now rose before them, a tongue of flame reaching into darkness. "A girl from my village once told me that, and I think she was right. I watched her burn on a warm summer's day, and will never forget that hungering, devouring, insatiable flame."
A long silence followed. Cale sensed inner conflict in Dennis. Legrand seemed to detect it as well, and they finished their dinner without speaking. Afterwards, Legrand took up his lute and strummed softly.
"I apologize for my queer mood, brothers," Dennis finally said. "But I know this wood. I traveled it many years ago, as an apprentice of the Malachi. I was a little younger than Cale is now. The memory is a bitter one."
"This wood is known to the Order," Legrand said. "Its German name is Heidenwald, which means gypsy wood or heathen wood, but commonly known as Heiden wood. It is an ancient forest, noted by the Romans who built a settlement near Arnest, and has a peculiar reputation knowing travelers avoid it, the unknowing who venture within often regret it. There's an old story about the Emperor Julian visiting these woods. And one morning while on a hunt, he heard the most beautiful sound imaginable, of a maiden singing, and followed her lovely voice into Heiden wood, accompanied only by his scout. The two men were soon lost, and weren't found till the following day, but by that time poor Julian had gone insane." Legrand rubbed his hands over the fire, then took a long pull on his wineskin. "I'll take first watch, brothers."
"I won't sleep in this wood, Legrand," Dennis replied. "I'll keep watch. Why don't you and Cale get some rest?"
Legrand began strumming again while Cale threw down his blankets and lay back on a cushion of soft grass. His back ached from 2 weeks on horseback, but they would reach Arnest tomorrow, hopefully to a rectory with a soft bed. With the warmth of the fire and the soft play of the lute, Cale soon fell asleep under the stars. At various times during the night, Cale would wake to see Dennis sitting perfectly still near the campfire, his gaze cast on the murmuring woodlands, and Cale was left with a peculiar impression, for it seemed that Dennis was listening intently in that hushed darkness, as if the wood spoke to him in the whisper of an old lover. By dawn, Dennis was already packing the horses and Legrand was dousing the campfire when Cale awoke. Feeling a bit guilty for sleeping late, Cale nodded to his companions and left camp, following the twin streams back into the forest. It took him longer than expected to find the oak grove again. There he tossed the medallion near the charred remains of the bonfire. Cale was about to leave when something caught his eye, and a shiver ran down his spine. Turning slowly, he crouched near the ashes. There was a set of footprints, moving left to right around the ashen circle. Surely these prints were here yesterday, and he had just missed them. No, they weren't. Cale glanced up at the towering oaks that encircled the meadow, as leaves of scarlet and gold floated down to the forest floor. He tried to imagine the midnight ritual, the dancing around the raging bonfire, the chanting and the singing, the summoning and the sacrifice. He walked carefully around the grove and noticed a cluster of white flowers strewn around the largest oak. He tore off one of the petals and could smell the telltale sweetness of black hellebore, a deforming poison. Cale lingered in the hidden grove as a soft breeze moaned through the oaks, scattering leaves about his feet. And he thought that he could hear his name on the wind as it whispered to him, beckoning and seductive. Stay, stay here and rest and sleep and never wake again. The rustle of leaves, the scent of the forest, the soft half-light that fell through the canopy gave the effect of a dream. Why not stay here, Cale thought, where everything was quiet and peaceful and time passed slowly. Then his fingers touched the crucifix that swung from his neck and a prayer passed his lips. Be with me always, my Lord and Savior. Release me from this evil spell.
When Cale returned to camp, he said nothing about the footprints, for Dennis was already on edge. What took you so long, brother? Dennis asked. I nearly sent Legrand out to find you. Cale apologized but didn't explain, and a few minutes later the Malachi were riding north into the uplands with the wind at their backs.
It was late afternoon before they reached Arnost, a small hamlet which seemed to be carved out of the Bavarian wilderness. Crude wicker men were hung in the town square, which was otherwise deserted. And as the October wind blew through the town, the wicker men danced and pitched, casting grotesque shadows across the square. As the Malachi rode past, a cottage door flew open and a woman shouted after them. Hurry indoors, she scolded, for night is falling and it's not safe to be out.